Good afternoon, everybody. Today, mainly, I'd like to speak to the men out there. How are you doing? Do you feel fulfilled? Well, I'm glad you're doing good. Do you have a purpose, or are you drifting and feel as though the world hates you and that you don't even know who you are or what you should be? Do you suffer from depression and anxiety? Perhaps it's anger, or maybe rage that you bottle up until you feel as though you could explode into such violence that everyone around you would recoil in fear and in disgust. Or perhaps you don't feel much of anything at all. Perhaps you've fallen into the safe space of apathy, or are being destroyed by quiet, crushing regret. Are your relationships fulfilling and respectful, or do you feel lonely? Do you feel beat down, never able to open up, or feel as though you can trust others? Do you have a purpose, goals, and a set of principles that guide you? Or are you just floating along in life, being taken wherever outside forces take you, and never directing your own path or direction? Men, we are under attack. Who we are at our core, for many, they now consider toxic, evil. We are blamed for most of the evil in the world. And if only we would become less manly, more feminine, then we could solve the world's problems. You all know exactly what I'm talking about, don't you? You know that you are not terrible and evil just for being who God made you to be. But you are told it over and over and over again. And it hurts. Well, guess what? You are absolutely necessary. And the things that make you a man are good and amazing. We as Christian men must relearn what it is to be a man of God. The type of man that has purpose and drive. The kind of man that lives by principles and does not fear. And does not let fear have charge over him. How to and what to be courageous about. You are called to be a warrior, a king, a priest, a relentless force that God will use to accomplish His purpose. So where do we start? First off, this is not in any way meant to put women down. Men and women have different purposes, and we are different. One is not better than the other. So I'm speaking to men today, and I hope the women listen so that you understand us better. But know that the truth is, women can be the thing that lifts a man up more than anything in life, except for God. But you can also be the thing that tears us down more than anything else. So, do not take this as a message against women. This is actually for women. Because if men are the proper men, women can be proper women. And it works together perfectly if we go with what God says. So, what is a man? I'm sure many of you have seen the movie, What is a Woman? Well, we're going to do a little bit differently. What is a man? Our definition must come from Scripture, or else we can literally define it in any way we want, which we've seen a lot of lately. And that's not a place to start from. So please turn to Genesis. We're going to turn to Genesis 1, verse 27. That's where we're going to start. Seems like a good place to start to me. Genesis 1, 27. What is a man? So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, God created him. Male and female, he created them. So first off, we are made as men, and women too, but as men, in God's image. We are not female. We are different. He says he created us separately. We are two sides to the same coin. Put the sides together, you get a full picture more of what God is. But two sides of the same coin. And God has hierarchy and structure and order in everything he does. The Father has a position. Christ has a position and a job as well. And we as men also have positions and specific jobs to do, as do women. Turn over to 1 Colossians 11:1. It says, "Be ye followers of me, even as I am of Christ." And then it starts talking about head covering some. Now, I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the ordinances that I have delivered to you. But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ. There's an order there. And the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. He literally just laid out specific jobs and a hierarchy that he wants. And there's nothing wrong with that. Does the Father hold Christ down and keep him under his thumb and keep Christ from being what it is that he could, the greatest he can be? No. No. So if the Father is above Christ, is the head of Christ, and Christ is the head of man, Christ doesn't try to hold us down as men and keep us under his thumb and not allow us to be the greatest we can be. Such is the same exact thing as it goes down in order as man being head over woman. Chris Rock is a comedian, and he once said that only women, children, and puppies are loved unconditionally. Men are loved based upon what they provide. There's maybe some truth in that, right, in the world today? And that has a lot of weight on the psyche of men, right? If you don't provide these metrics, then you're thrown away. You're not worth anything. However, Christ loved all men and all women, despite the fact that we can provide absolutely nothing for him. We can't do anything for God. We can't do anything for Christ. He doesn't need us. Yet he loved us. Men can and are loved unconditionally by God. He laid down his life for us, just as a husband or father would lay down his life for his wife or his children. Ephesians 5. Let's go to Ephesians 5. We're going to start in verse 25. Husbands, men, love your wives, who are women. Even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. He sacrificed himself that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies, that he loveth his wife, he who loves his wife loves himself. For no man hates his flesh, but he nourishes it and cherishes it, even as the Lord does the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause a man shall leave his father and his mother, and shall be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. The way Christ loved the church, the way Christ was the head of the church, the way Christ sacrificed men, we are to love the same way. That is something we can provide, right? We do want to provide as men. We want to give our families things. We want to take care of them. We do want love and respect in return, though. That's true. But Christ gives us the example on how to provide. How to provide, like He did. He said, I'm going to do this thing that is so hard on me for you. For you. In a way, Christ in this example was the masculine, right? And the church was the feminine. Based upon what verse 32 says, this is a great mystery, but I speak of Christ and the church. So there's your example. He set that example. He loved the church and all of mankind, if you look at the entire process that He's working out, His whole plan, so much that He sacrificed His life for all of us, while we really couldn't do anything for Him. So while it can be hard on the psyche of men to feel like their only worth and love that is given to them is tied to what they provide physically, there is a little bit of truth in that. But God loved us men, and we could do nothing for Him. In John 1, 4:19, it says, we love Him because He first loved us. We love Him because He first loved us. You know, there's a lot of time that men will see a woman and decide, that's her. Sometimes it's real quick, right? And we fall in love real fast when it's the one. Sometimes you have to prove yourself. But we love her first. Not all the time, but that does happen. God loved us. He looked down on us and said, I love you, before we ever said we love Him. And to the small extent that Mr. Chris Rock was correct, it is our calling and our sacred duty to love in the same sacrificial way that Christ did. He did it for me, so I can do it for you. So, if we are created in the image of God, and we have specific things we are to do, we are to love, we are to protect, we are to sacrifice for our loved ones and the church and people outside the church. So how are we doing it that? Tell yourself the truth. Tell yourself the truth. Sometimes somebody will come along and say something to you. They'll be like, ooh, Brian, you gained some weight. Well, that was mean. Well, was it true? Yeah, it was. So what are you going to do about it? Just going to get your feelings hurt when somebody says, hey, this is wrong. You need to fix that. You going to throw a temper tantrum? No. Take the truth that they said and say, now what am I going to do about it? Don't get hurt. Don't lash out or shrink away. Use it as fuel. Use it as fuel. And then make the change. One of the best ways to really take a look at yourself, and this one's always scary, is to ask God to show you your faults. Every time I pray that, I'm partly thinking, I really hope you don't. Many times, that isn't God just, oh, there's the thought, yeah, I need to change that. No, a lot of times He sends people. And a lot of times He sends people that it's not very easy for us to take that criticism from. Maybe it's somebody you don't get along with very well. Maybe it's somebody that's just so different from you, you think they're kind of weird. Maybe it's somebody with some major problems of their own. But God sends them to show you the truth. How are you going to react? Job said, you don't have to turn there, Job 13:23, He said, how many are my iniquities and sins? He's asking God this. Make me know my transgression and my sin. God made him know. God made him know. And that's rough. If you read what he went through, that was rough. I can't even imagine that. But we must try to be as close to that image of God that we were created in when we look in the mirror as possible. It is, after all, where we're headed to become part of the family of God. Every day we should look in that mirror and see we look closer to that half of the coin that God created us to be. The truth is, your life comes down to decisions. And at any time, you are just one decision away from drastically changing your life, from drastically changing your marriage, from changing your job. We make lots of little decisions that add up to something, but also, there are big decisions that we can make every single day. It's a big decision to decide to come here today. If you go, you start that path, you can make it real easy not to come. Or if you say, you know what, I'm just tired of my family. I'm going to booger off. People do that all the time. Those decisions, every single day, whether small or large, we have to make. And you have got to get them right as much as possible. If you don't, make a course correction. Ask for the truth. So are you strong? Are you a strong man? Are you? I dare say probably in some places you are, in some places you aren't. Every single person. So what is a strong man? If you ask the question, am I one, what is it? A strong man is someone who is what they say they are. First off, you have to define yourself. Have you figured out how to define yourself? We already said we are created in the image of God. If that's who we are, that's who we have to try to strive to be. Okay? So define yourself as that. And then, are you a husband, a father, a Christian, a member of this congregation? Are you strong? So let's be honest. When we think about who we are and who we're supposed to be, many times we feel like we aren't good enough. I feel that way plenty of times. We get told all the time that we as men are the problem. And we are naturally bad and evil and not good enough. No, reject that. Your life has calling, has a calling, and you are set apart. 1 Peter 2:9. This does apply to the women too, but man, I want you to think about it in a masculine way. But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim and praise the praises of him who was called you out of darkness into this marvelous light. You are chosen. You men are royal. You are holy. You are special to God, the almighty ruler of the entire universe. You are special to him, and he has purpose for you. So now, call to action. We've defined what we are, what we should be. Turn to in 1 Chronicles 11 and 12, there's a bunch of men that are following David. And these men are called something over and over and over again. These are mighty men of valor. These are strong men, courageous men. They were not weak. They were not afraid. They did whatever it was that their king asked them to do. In 1 Chronicles 11, verse 12, and after him was Eleazar, the son of Dodo, the Ahohite, who was one of the three mightiest. They name a bunch of different men, but these are some of the three mightiest. And he was with David in the, wherever that place is, Padamin. And there the Philistines were gathered together to battle. And there was a parcel of ground full of barley, and the people had fled away from the Philistines. And they set themselves in the midst of that parcel and delivered it. They slew the Philistines, and the Lord saved them by great deliverance. These guys were not afraid. They stuck themselves right in the middle while everybody else ran away. These men were not weak. They were not afraid. They did the bidding of their king, and God was with them. Verse 15. Now three of the 30 captains went down to the rock to David, to the cave of Adullam. And the host of the Philistines was encamped in the valley. And David was then in the hold, and the Philistines' garrison was then at Bethlehem. Garrison can be anywhere from 150 to 500 men. And David longed, he said, "Oh, that one of them would give me a drink of water from that well that's by the gate." The three mightiest, they heard this. And they broke through the host of Philistines and drew the water out of the well that was by the gate. And they took it. And they took that back to David. David said, "Man, I really would like some water from that well." And those guys said, "You know what? Let's do it." And they just went. They went. Their king said he needed something, and they went. Now, David did learn a lesson here, not to just say stuff off the cusp, because those were some bad dudes he had with him. And they did it, even though he was like, "Oh, I shouldn't have said that," because they put themselves in danger. There's definitely a lesson for leadership there. But these guys went because their king wanted it. Masculinity is not toxic. Sin is toxic. Just like femininity is not toxic, sin is toxic. Weakness is not a virtue, and being fearful and frail is not a virtue. Train your mind to be strong and as capable as possible. The way you do that is purposely doing things that are difficult. That is where we grow. Sometimes the most basic way to start training your mind is to train your body. Right? Do workouts. I've started going back to the gym, and I'm making myself do it because I'm getting too old and fat. I said, "I can't do this anymore. My knees hurt." And I make myself go even though I'm sleepy. And it's making me feel better. I'm forcing myself. But really, more than my body getting stronger, it makes my mind stronger, because I make myself do something I don't want to do. I want to go home, sit there, and eat a sandwich. You know, the Roman centurions, when they would practice, they would use a sword that was twice as heavy as the one they used in battle. So when they went to the real battle, it wasn't hard. They made themselves do something that was hard. So when the real problems arose, they were strong, they were ready. I was listening to a guy, and he said what he does, and I started doing this, is to force your mind to take control over your body, the things that are just comfortable. Get in the shower while the water's still cold. Make yourself stand there until it warms up. And every time you do that, think about, "I am forcing myself to do something that is not the easy thing, and I will do the same thing today with sin. I will do the same thing today with sin." And then it warms up and you feel okay. But for a minute there, you're thinking. First Corinthians 9:27. "But I discipline my body, bringing it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified." You have to have your physical lusts under control, for sure. But training your body trains your mind. Controlling your body controls your mind. Well, your mind is controlling your body, therefore you learn how to control your mind better. And the control over sin comes from where? Not your body, it comes from your mind. And God working with you, with His Holy Spirit. We've got atonement coming up. That's a really good day to say, "I'm going to do something that my body doesn't like to strengthen my mind, to make me closer to God." That's what fasting is. I'm going to do the thing that I don't want to do. And it makes me stronger. It makes me tougher. It focuses me. It focuses me. The whole time your stomach's rumbling, you're not just thinking, boy, I sure want to eat. You should be thinking, God told me to do this. You are focused on God because your stomach puts you there. Remember, meekness is not the same as weakness. Being meek is having the ability to draw the sword and knowing how to use it, but having the strength and the wisdom to keep it sheathed. Meekness is great strength under control. That is God, right? All the power there ever is, under control. Christ, in Matthew 26, verse 53, he said, "Or do you not think that I can now pray to my Father and he will provide me with more than 12 legions of angels?" When they came to take him, he kept his sword sheathed, in stark contrast to what Peter had done, right? Peter did not know what he was doing and really had very little power. And Christ had all the power. Peter didn't know when to fight and when not to. Christ did. That is real power. You wait for the king to give the command. Christ knew that the Father did not want him to fight at that moment, even though he had the power to do so. Trumpet shows that when the Father tells him to fight, he will fight. He will fight. We have this very masculine Feast of the Trumpets coming up, right? And when he's told to fight, he fights. We must as men learn to have the strength to fight and the wisdom not to most of the time. We must wait for word from the king. Because Jesus said, if my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight, right? There's a time and a place and an order. And in the vernacular, I'm going to tell guys, one more thing we need to do is we need to get a posse. You need a squad. You need your boys. You need a small group of men that you can talk to and count on and counsel with. Men that you respect and love. David and Jonathan are a great example of that, right? They had a covenant between them. Jonathan was to be second under David, and David was to watch out for his family when he ascended. Except for Jonathan, if Saul stays alive and David doesn't take over, he becomes king. And he's like, no, I love you. I love God. I want to do what he says. I will step back. And David says, I got you, man. When the world attacks men, we need to make church a refuge and a safe place for men. The kind of place to help boys become men and to train them. A place where they belong and they can thrive. A place to learn and grow their natural God-given traits and then learn to bring them under control and use them as tools for good. I very much understand that men can and have done some of the worst and most awful things in history. One, we are the bigger and stronger of the two sexes, and we have the biology and temperament to be more aggressive. That is true. However, most of the great leaps forward in science and in many things have been from men. The tiniest percentage of the infrastructure of the entire world has been created and built and maintained by men. That's something that's a good thing. That should be appreciated. That's not easy. Any men who've done hard labor with their hands, they know. Men have done such a good job of building a safe society where we don't have bandits roaming everywhere and there aren't wild animals and we have running water and electricity and we have medicine and safeness. We've done such a good job of building a safe and prosperous world in many ways that women now say they don't need us. I saw a lady post when Ukraine was first attacked. She said, "I'm all for women's equality, but now that World War III is breaking out, I know my place is in the kitchen." I thought that was kind of funny and sad at the same time. What happened in Ukraine? The women and the children, we get them out and the men had to stay. Being a man's not easy, but it's our sacred duty. It doesn't make us better than women at all. It makes us different. Good men want purpose, respect, something bigger than themselves, and trust, a code of conduct. All these things are provided by God through His plan and His church. Men, we play an integral part in the plan of God. We are built and designed to be leaders, workers, husbands, fathers, and friends. True and pure masculinity is not toxic. Sin is. We are to mirror half of who God is. We are to teach the next generation and guide these boys to be men. The kind of men who dedicate their lives to God, which by extension dedicates their lives to other people. We must look at ourselves and look at each other and be honest with what we see. And use that to grow, to become better as individuals and as men of God's church. We are, you are needed by others, and you are loved by God. If you are feeling like the world wants to throw you away, lean on your brothers. Lean on your brothers. We understand. Know this, Satan wants to discourage and sideline you, because if he does, then your family and community will fall apart. That is his goal, to destroy the family, because the whole point of God's plan is to grow family. He hates family. And you are the protector. You are its champion. So what is a man? You are, and you are loved. And you're respected, and you are needed. You are called to be a mighty man of valor.